Okay.
So Michel wants to prove to you.
I'm not
that
totally crazy.
He's not crazy.
You can actually put something in the. I can enlarge thing. This maybe. Okay. So I can.
So where's the tool?
You can take a. If you use the command key, that was the secret. I can grab something here and then put it in the toolbar. And then with command again, I can poof, get it out. Now, this raises an issue that we'll talk about later called discoverability. Because if you don't know that it's there, it's unlikely that you run into it explicitly. Right. So let's get back to the main
to the main talk.
To the main talk here. So essentially, this is the outline for what we're going to talk about for the next of the course.
Your job is to know this, to understand what this means, right? So we will hand these out now.
So Wendy is going to hand them out. What we're going to do today is just give you a sort of a grand tour very quickly of all of these things. So you get an overall picture. You're not going to sort of fully understand everything, I assume, but that's all right. Because in the past, we've tried to do this bit by bit, and we think it's maybe better to have the big picture first. And so essentially, we're going to talk about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of these famous generative principles. I'm not going to go into the two columns today.
There's extra given back to me.
I'll give examples that come from one or the other column.
I think there's too much energy in the handing out of this thing, so let's finish handing these out. If you have extras, hand them to me. I'm happy to keep these. You have enough. You guys are ready. All right. Do you want one? Do you need another one? One per person, yeah.
Okay, we
yeah.
Do
you need another one?
Yes.
All right.
We also need
that. There, sorry. You should have enough.
Thank you.
And if we're short, I mean, you've seen this, but you can have it for now. As long as I have one. All right, so now let's get started again.
Okay, so yeah, the goal is not really to scare you.
Well, it sort of is.
But a little bit. So we're going to get into a set of big words that can impress your friends. And we're going to go through these 7 principles, one by one. First, this group of 3, then a group of 2, then another group of 2. So these first 3 are really related to the concepts of instruments and substrates that we just talked about, which are 2 types of objects that complement the objects of interest. So we call them reification, polymorphism, reuse. Again, I'm going to go very quickly because we'll sort of get
dive
in depth
into it, yeah.
In each of them starting next week. So reification. So reification is when you come up in the course of the design process of thinking of how to make the system better, and when you understand what people do and need, that something that was a little bit of an abstract thing becomes a real new object. Reify comes from the Latin res. Res in Latin means a thing. Interestingly, in French, it gave the word rien, which means nothing. But that's the magic of language. Anyway, reify is to turn something into an object. So an example here that I like is in many of the applications, and for example, in Google Slides like others, you have objects. And objects, as we've seen, have properties. If we think about the text objects, there is the font, its size, the margins, the interline spacing, alignment, left, right, center. So all of these are individual properties of the objects. If you think of an image, you have the size, you have the brightness, and all these things. Now, the thing is, of course, the tools the applications give you ways to change those properties individually. But oftentimes, you end up wanting to put them together so you can apply, if you use Microsoft Word or in Google Docs or the things, as a style, saying, well, you know, all of these properties, say, left align, font Helvetica, 12-point double line spacing, you know, I don't want to have to do this one by one every time I touch a piece of text. I want to put them together. And so we reify the concept of a collection of property values into a thing we're going to call a style. And the style becomes what we like to call secondary objects of interest. There are objects of interest that are not really immediate, that you come up with immediately when you think of, say, text editing or word processing, but that are very handy. And if you want to use any word processor in sort of a expert way, you need to know about styles. And people talk about style and style sheets, right? So the idea is that here you have properties. This is from Microsoft Word about, it's unreadable, so I can tell, but it's about paragraph properties. And then you turn it into a style, and then you have a collection of styles. Mm-hmm. And then when you have collection of, you think, oh, substrate. Mm-hmm. And so that's where things start to sort of click together. And so reification, turning one example of reification, we'll see others, is turning a set of object of properties into a new object as such.
And it's important to see that these things interact with each other. So what would we call this thing based on our discussion before the break? I'm sorry? Well, this is an this is definitely an instrument. Yeah. But there's something else. Is this an object, a substrate, or a tool?
Substrate.
It's a substrate. So the styles are turned into objects, they're tool objects, and they live inside this space that we've set aside for them. Here is a substrate that handles that, okay?
Yeah, but so you can argue that each style is a tool because you use it to apply it to an object, right?
So it's a substrate that's
containing
tools. These tools. Yes, yes. Daniel.
What's the difference between container and substrate? I don't see the difference. Substrates and containers.
Well, a container.
Well, containers are substrates.
But
there may be other types of substrates, but
constraints have substrates have a specific definition, which includes not only that they contain data, but they impose structure on that data, and they define what kinds of constraints and dependencies there are. We will go into more detail on that, but it's not just a box. Right, it's a place where things live, so it's a container in that sense. But in addition, there's more stuff that you need to know to make it a constraint. So, for example, that it only contains styles is a constraint. That the styles are laid out in a vertical list is a different kind of constraint. There may be other properties associated with this that you want to, and there may be dependencies. Like it may come from some external source that defines what styles there are. So you may have defined them yourself, but it may be a corporate style that you inherit. So there's all kinds of other things. So it's beyond a container. A container is, I would say, container is a subset of the idea of a substrate. Substrate has more complexity to it. It has more meat to it. Okay.
So can you think of objects of interest that we mentioned about Google Slides that you could sort of interpret as the result of a reification of something, someone said, oh, we should turn this into an object. Yep.
The layout?
The layout?
Mm-hmm.
So the template?
Yeah, it was
template?
Initially not an object, and then they were like, we are using too many layouts, and then they have refined it into an object.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Another example, one more.
Moise, you were talking about drawing. So what would be a tool that's associated with drawing?
Pencil.
Yeah, or a brush, or whatever. They also have interesting things like there's a format brush in Excel, you know, where you can grab a format and it exists in several. I think Google Slides has it as well.
Yeah, format brush.
So that's an example of taking the thing.
So reification can also be a process by which, well, I want to be able to do this kind of operation on an object. Let me turn it into a tool. And so you reify something. We'll have an example about aligning objects where you reify them into a tool. So reification is just this thing. Once you turn something into an object that people can manipulate, it tends to make the interface more
powerful,
but also easier to understand. Mm-hmm. Less sort of magical or having to know that, you know, this thing in this submenu does this thing, but making it more concrete. Mm-hmm. So that's reification. Now, once we have reification, we can think of ways of making these new objects or these new tools or instruments more powerful. Yes? Well, the thing is that here, every time I want to change parameters of a paragraph, I mean properties of a paragraph, I go menu, format, paragraph, it pops up this thing, and I have to set all the alignment and the spacing and this and that. So I deal with properties one by one, and then I say, okay, do it. And if I want to apply the exact same properties to another paragraph, I have to redo all the things,
one by one.
So in my head, I want these paragraphs to look the same, but in the software, I have to do the same operations again and again. And so by saying, well, we're going to grab all of these values of these properties into one object, and then I can apply this object, and boom, in one click, I get all of these properties changed. We give a name to this new object. We call it a style.
Isn't that polymorphism, isn't that polymorphism or like template or something like that? Why is it reification?
Well,
turning it into an object is reification, and then being able to apply it to different types of information is polymorphic.
And so polymorphism, it comes from, yes, sorry.
So until and unless we come with a brand new function for any software, we will mostly be, when we use reification, we just have a bunch of commands and we have a preset options basically.
That's one example. There are many ways to apply reification. And next week we'll go more in depth and show more examples. So that's a classic one. Another classic one is turning things into tools. Sort of coming up with new tools that you hadn't thought of as such.
So something
that was just an item in the menu, for example, you make it into a tool that you can grab and apply and control what the tool is doing to the object rather than just, you know, clicking a button.
If you go with Danielle's idea of ordering slides, you could reorder one by one, or you could have an ordering tool that goes click, 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 and it says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it does it. And so what you've done is taken the action of ordering, turned it into this one little tool that you can then apply. So that would be a classic example of that, okay? And then, that's why we were kind of going, is it a concept, is it a... it could then be what we call a secondary object of interest, because now it's something like a style is also a secondary object. It's not a slide or the text, but it's a way of manipulating the slides or text. And then that can, if once that becomes an object in its own right that you can apply, then it is a tool that is an object. Yes?
If someone can be known that making all this stuff as tools, mm-hmm. then we are like passing the threshold of the cognitive load.
That's a great question, and that leads to the next
and
slide.
And that's where polymorphism comes into play.
Right.
So polymorphism comes from Greek, poly, multiple.
So we've done Latin
several.
And now Greek.
Yeah, I know. That's why, you know, I studied Latin and Greek as a student. So don't remember much of it, but and morph is the shape.
Yeah.
So something that can take many shapes, but it's also something used in programming languages as a concept when you can define, for example, a function that can be applied to objects of different type. So what we find is that, indeed, to reduce the cognitive load and not have too many zillions of instruments and objects of interest, we try to make them each more powerful so they can work in different contexts. So one that is so obvious that it almost goes without saying is the move instrument. The fact that this is from Google Slides or PowerPoint, I don't remember. You can use the same tool to move an image, to move a shape, and to move several objects at once. And so there's polymorphism here at, in a sense, two levels. One is, of course, moving text, moving an image, moving a shape, moving a video should be the same. Why would, I don't need to have different tools for that. But it may mean different things. For example, I didn't show resizing, but resizing the box for the text may have a different effect than when I resize the image than when I resize the shape. So the same tool may be usable with different types of object, but with different effects on those objects.
This is situated action because you're taking into account situation, but also the type of data that you're dealing with.
Now, one example that we like to talk about in Microsoft Word, Excel, and all that is if you want to change the color of something, you have different tools. One is for the color of the text, another one for the color of the background, another one for the color. Why isn't it the same color tool? The color is a color, and you should be able to apply it to different things. Now, there's another level here of polymorphism, because in the second part, I selected all three objects at once and moved them all together. And so once you have a tool that you can apply to different types of object, it also means that you can apply them to a group of those objects at once. And here, moving, of course, has the same effect on all three objects, but if I select several objects and resize them, well, depending on systems, it does different things. Sometimes it scales them individually. Sometimes it scales them as a whole. And so you have to decide what this tool should work like with groups of objects. But polymorphism is really powerful to reduce the number of objects that you have and make each one more powerful. So I don't know. Can we think of other instances of polymorphism in Google Slides? That's what we've been using as an example.
Things that exist now or should exist but don't. I'm going to ask you just to, while you think, this ordering tool. Could you use the ordering tool for other things? For?
If there are sections, then we can use ordering tool for each sections.
Yes, you could order sections. You could order.
The navigation bar tab order.
The superposition order?
Sorry. Yes.
In the navigation bar, we have
tabs. Right, so you could use it to change the order.
Mm-hmm.
Anastasia, did you have one like that?
In animation, the order in which things show up, mm-hmm. which is a pain to do in most systems I know.
Like here's this kind of fuzzy concept, but once you turn it into a tool, then it causes you to think in a really creative way to do things that I haven't seen in any of these tools, systems. But I would love an ordering tool. That would be just super useful. Okay? Are there other things like that that you can think of in a slide thing? Other actions that either have been turned into tools that are polymorphic, that can apply.
Text, like title text and heading 1 and 2, they are objects.
Yes.
They've been used in different slides. Like LM headings, heading 1, heading 2.
Right.
LM
mm-hmm. Yeah. So you could, I'm not sure how that's polymorphic in the sense. It is true that they're different. So you might have a family of fonts where you say it's you know, this size for the title, this size for the subtitle, and this size for the regular text, and it's actually a different font. It might be a serif font instead of a sans serif font. But it would be, we're looking for a tool that's polymorphic. So it would have to be a tool that is creating this.
Yes, yeah, so like we have the format painter for text, right?
Yes.
Where we can have the properties of text and apply them to them. It's the same for images,
yep.
Right? Like the size and the ratio or the opacity, I can use it for one and then map it to other.
So that's an interesting take on that. So if you start with, in text, you want to have the equivalent of titles and then smaller subtitles and little text. What does that mean in another context, like with images or with sketches or with animations maybe? I mean, there's big animations and medium-sized animations and little animations. I don't know. I mean, you could start playing with that as an idea and having it operate, doing the, like understanding that we're now not talking about text, we're talking about something else, and the something else, it still does something that is predictable from the user's point of view. So it's an interesting thing. See, there's no wrong answers here. Right now, what we're trying to do is sort of get you thinking out of the box. Jay, I think you had
maybe
something.
Maybe like a clipboard kind of thing, where you can like drag and drop objects,
yes.
And then you just reuse
right.
them again and again.
We yeah. have remarkably so non-powerful clipboards, and they should be very powerful in these things. And we'll get to that in a second, too. But that's also
yeah, but
really
yeah, being able to
important.
Put in a clipboard any type of object,
yeah.
Right. And in fact, clipboards.
Or any tool.
Well, clipboards are limited, but they do support the fact that the same object can itself be polymorphic. Because, for example, if I copy paste a file, but I copy a file, but I paste it, in some context, it's going to paste the entire file. In another, it's going to just paste the name of the file if I'm in the text editor.
Mm-hmm.
So it can contain the stuff of different types. But each item can also be in different representations.
Lock items.
The objects on my slide, but I could also imagine to rearrange certain tools and say I want to rearrange and lock them, or I want to rearrange and lock the.
Yeah, so having a general tool for locking things.
Locking or
right.
rearranging.
Or, yeah.
Or rearranging. That would then apply yeah. to any kind of content.
Yeah.
And also apply at the level, perhaps, of the light table, right? So one of the things that drives me crazy about the light table is it's actually one-dimensional. It's into, but it just keeps wrapping around and around and around, and many times that's not what I want. And if you had your locking tool, it would allow me to say, well, you can't go into this space, so now I have this nice space, and I could lock this. These three always have to go together, and so if they can't fit on this thing, then they go in the next line, or whatever it is. So, yes.
And there was another, yeah?
June.
Crop tool. In
a crop tool.
Crop tool.
Yeah.
In Word, we have this when you press Control Enter, it moves to the next page.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, when you want to separate an image, there's no thing to do that. When you want to take a piece of text and make two text boxes from that,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing
yep.
to do that.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good one.
So, again, yes, go ahead.
And ordering in terms of what's in the foreground and the background.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yep.
Superposition
and
order.
And it can handle
yep.
all of those things.
Okay.
Good. You got it. Got it.
Okay. Now the third one, reuse. I don't know if this is Latin or Greek, but
it's English. Yeah.
And I like to say that, you know, humans are lazy. We don't like to do things from scratch. We like to copy something we've done before and change it. I like to joke with that when I write a letter of recommendation, I copy paste the last one I did and I just change the name. I do a bit more than that, but
yeah.
but at least copying the things
but
puts me in the right context, and I can reuse parts, or it makes me think of things to do. So reusing things is a common human trait, and there are two forms of reuse. One is I can reuse things I have already created. Copy paste is the obvious example, but sometimes what I want to reuse is what I have. The action that I've performed before. I've turned this paragraph into this style, and I want to turn this other one in the same style. So, for example, I can say, well, I rotate this object, rotate it again and again and again, apply whatever rotation angle I did again and again. By contrast, I can copy-paste objects to duplicate an object and make several copies of it. With respect to the first one, there is one thing I like in Microsoft Office, and there is, you probably know, I don't like many things about Microsoft Office. Mm-hmm. But one of them is Command Y, Command on the
yes.
Mac. It's probably
yes.
Control Y or something on Windows. Anybody knows what Command Y does?
How many of you have used Emacs?
No, are you kidding?
Emacs? No. Linux users, not at all. Unix, no.
Well, Command Y is do again. Do it again. So you do something like change the color of an object. Then you select another object, you do Command Y, it's applying the same color. So you don't have to go and find the same color and apply it. So now it's very limited, like the clipboard. The clipboard only remembers one, the last yeah. thing you copied. If you copy twice, boom, the first one is gone. Command Y only repeats the last command you did, not you know, the second to last or the last three or things like this. But it's often very useful.
So the Y, just for those who like trivia, stands for yank. Which means grab
yeah.
from the previous thing. So you basically, you do something, and then you want to go and do, and you yank it back, and you use it again. So it's Command Y. Anyway.
So what are things you can reuse in
Google Slides?
Google Slides. At the level of actions or at the level of objects? Yes? Yes.
Absolutely.
With the format brush?
Yeah, like reapply the same format to other things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. That's a really, it's one of the rare good things that they've actually got in there. there should be more of that, but that is turns out to be very useful. Yes.
Sorry?
Layouts. Yes, absolutely. The templates and the layouts.
Yeah, the notion of template that you mm-hmm. can apply to a slide and then another slide and another slide. Yeah.
Out of curiosity, how many of you use templates or layouts when you've used, most of you have used Google Slides. How many, just out of curiosity? Okay, that's good. I have been horrified by some of my students who go in and rearrange the slide position of every single slide and it floats.
And how many of you have modified a template?
Oh, good, yay, all right.
Yeah,
okay.
Wow.
That's good.
Expert users here.
Yes. All right. Good. We expect more
okay,
from you
so
now.
That's reuse. So to summarize those three, the idea is with reification, come up with new objects that will become objects of interest for the users. With polymorphism, figure out how the same command can be applied to objects of different types. And with reuse, apply previous commands to objects, including things like copy-paste. And the examples we saw was the style becomes an object. You can drag and drop or move text, icons, shapes, you name it. And you can duplicate an object instead of creating it from scratch. So what we saw also already in this discussion is you know, once you reify things, you have more opportunities for polymorphism. When you reify new objects, you have more opportunities for reuse. So these things sort of feed each other. They're in a sense, fairly independent, but fairly complementary.
And that's the answer to Danielle's question, which is, okay, you get this if I go and reify everything, I just get tons and tons of stuff. But if I make it polymorphic, then that means I have a useful tool that I can apply it in different places and it does the right thing. And also, if I can reuse it, then I can reduce again how much stuff that I have out there. So there's ways of both, you know, this divergent versus convergent stuff we talk about in the design process. We also have that in terms of the creation of these tools. There's sort of like tools that expand, you know, and get more of them, and then there are things that are more efficient and they reduce your set of possible or the number of things that you have to deal with. All right.
Okay, now let's continue. So two more principles here, feed forward and feedback.
Right.
So, you wanna go for this or?
Well, let's see.
You remember what the video is?
No.
Okay, well, so feed forward. So feed forward and feedback is to help users both remember what's possible, so discoverability.
Right. These two work as
and also see what it is you're about to do or in the process of doing. So feed forward is forward, the future, mm-hmm. What would happen if, what is possible. Mm-hmm. And so an example here, a classic one from PowerPoint, I believe, is alignment suggestions, where you see this tiny yellow line says, oh, this would be centered if you stick here. And there's a little bit of magnetism, so it's kind of stuck on this line if you don't move it too far. I'll replay it, I guess, because the line is hard to see. So here, you know, the system is just indicating, oh, you know, you're aligned in the middle. Maybe this is what you like. And I'm giving you help in doing this alignment and informing you that it's there, but also mm-hmm. keeping it aligned if you want.
Right. And the keeping that it aligned if you want is saying that it will impose a constraint that says it is center aligned if you choose to stop there. It kind of snaps on there, and then you know that it is aligned in the center. So it's informing you that there's a constraint that's available to you if you want to use it, if you take advantage of that. So feed forward is what's possible, right?
And I have to say, in a lot of software, the feed forward is very limited. For example, we were talking about layout before, and we showed this thing. You have this layout menu with all the layouts, and you see sort of miniature versions of it. But if you want to see what it's like on your current slides, you have to apply it, and says, "Oops, this is ugly." Mm-hmm. Undo. You know,
you can't
if
slide over
a feed
see what
forward
it would,
be
like,
as I browse over these layouts, it would apply them to my slides, so I see the effect. And if I click, then it commits. And if I don't click, you know, it goes away. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that can be done in terms of better feed forward. So in Google Slides, do you have ideas of things that already have good feed forward that maybe should?
I want to say something sort of in general about feedforward and feedback is this notion of discoverability, which is discovery, which is the concept that we're dealing with. And these are generative principles here on how you can apply them. Feedforward and feedback are ways of helping the user figure out how the system works. And we saw a really nice example of Michel having by accident discovered that he could do something, and then forgetting that he has to do the control thing to make it happen, and then going and re-showing you because he did rediscover it. But they buried it. They made it really hard. And so sometimes, particularly in systems that are complex and designed for experts, there's a lot of hidden functionality that's available, but you don't know how to make it. You don't know how to find it. First of all, you don't know that it's there, or sometimes you know it's there, like Michel, but
you forgot the actual
key. And so the other thing that helps you with is feedback.
Let's
you want to finish with feed forward?
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep going. All right.
Because I think it's important
to not
mix them up. So feed forward in Google Slides.
Is there anything else? Yeah, Eric.
Would those handles for resizing be a feed forward? It lets you know that it's possible.
Yeah, it lets you know that it's possible to resize. Yes. And it's what we call one trial learning, which is you see these little boxes show up and you go, huh, I wonder what happens if I do that. Oh, it resizes. And then you remember that, right?
Or sometimes like, oh, no, it rotates.
Well, yeah, that's true, too, because it gives you this other thing. But yeah, that's a great one. That's a great one. Unfortunately, in Google Slides, there are not a lot of good feed-forward examples, but there are a few. Can we think of any others?
I don't know, no. No, but the question is, where would you really appreciate it?
In a template, it'll tell you like the title placeholder. I'm thinking of what Moisa was saying.
Yeah, that's right.
That it can tell you what kinds of content that will be in there. It's not very smart about it. You could do a whole lot more with that, but it gives you a little bit of feed forward about this is going to be this kind of text, and it's going to be treated as a title versus a subtitle. Anything else?
You order the slides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that would be an example, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any of that, just little kind of cues, yeah.
I don't know if they have a preview for animations.
Ah, yes.
To see how it would look, but I
don't know if
I don't.
Well, so
they sort of.
I don't know about Google Slides. I don't use animations in Google Slides. I know in PowerPoint they drive me crazy because it's very hard to know what's going to happen. And the only thing they have, and in Keynote as well, is a preview button. But preview is not feed forward. It's really an action, so you play it so you see what it's looking, but you already have to have applied it to see what it's going to be.
It's more of a feedback button.
There was a version in Keynote where, again, when you had the list of animations, when you put your cursor on it, it would play a little video showing you what is the animation, because they all have these weird names,
right.
And you don't know if the thing is going to twirl or what it's going to do. So that would be a feed forward. But
it would be
I
a
agree
good opportunity
that it's
for
really
feed
missing.
Forward, and we just don't see much of it.
So if you add like an image and there is text around the image, then the text also moves accordingly. If you're like,
mm-hmm. Oh, it relays out.
Yeah, when you're resizing like the image, then the text can either go like below
right.
or on the side.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
Google Slide does that.
I think if
it
you
could.
Have like the the way how the image is positioned, I think it does.
Okay. But it would be good to have if
yeah.
it doesn't do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like how it is in Word or something
yeah.
like that.
When you're in a collaborative mode, in
yes.
the slides, when you open the slide and someone is also in the slide, so it shows you the other person in
right.
the
yep.
slide.
Right. Now that's interesting because it's not quite feed forward in that it's not saying what it's going to do, but it is a really important, I would call that feedback actually, I think.
Well, actually, it's called feed-through.
Feed-through is the better term. Yeah, it's kind of like what's happening now.
Well, because feed-through is what's
really
happening
important.
Elsewhere that is sort
yes.
of being
good point. Yeah.
Forwarded to you.
Right, that's right. But it's a good thing to think about. All right, let's get to feedback.
And now we have feedback.
Okay.
And so feedback is when the system is telling you what it is you're doing, which helps you, as we'll see here, to adjust something, but also sometimes to understand that, you know, the system is understanding you in
right.
a sense. So here the very simple example is you have an image and I slide the saturation thing and it goes black and white versus color.
That's going dark.
Yeah,
it's hard
well,
to see in
it's
this
black
light,
and white.
But yeah.
It's crappy projector.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here I can see in real time what's happening. So it's showing me the state of it. Unlike, for example, earlier when I was showing this dialog box for the paragraph setting in Word, where I have to say align left and make it 12 font Helvetica, nothing happens until I click OK. And so I don't have feedback of what it is I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there is really an excuse for this. I mean, 30 years ago, with the computers we had then, yes, you couldn't do this in real time. But nowadays, come on. And so feedback is really important because in the physical world, you know, the physical actions we do have immediate effect on things. So we are really attuned to perceiving things, the effect of things as we perform them.
Right.
You
so
wanted to add something, or
could we think about examples in
good feedback and bad feedback or no feedback?
So just think about actions that you perform, and yeah, Clita.
When you're rotating object, it shows the degrees.
Yes,
yeah.
That would be a good one. Mm-hmm. Eric?
Maybe when you click some object and it gets highlighted and gets those handles, you know that it's currently the object in focus.
That's true, yes.
Yep.
It tells you what's been chosen, yeah, the current one. Anything else?
It's also with the one in which slide you are in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the current slide has an
highlighted.
Outline.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
When you select text, it gets all highlighted.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, so all of these have to do with the notion of selection,
mm-hmm.
And which is an important concept, actually,
mm-hmm.
that probably should be reified into a real object of interest, because if you don't understand selection in today's applications, you know, you you're really in trouble.
June.
I had a question. You mentioned about the font thing where you said you select all the information on the font and then you press OK to see. Wouldn't that be feed forward? Because you're doing something and.
But it's not going.
What you're expecting is feed forward.
Well, okay. So here, what I'm doing when I'm moving the slider is when I'm done, it's going to be in the state I left it in. Mm. So it's feedback because it's telling me what it is, what it is, what it
and
is.
It's like I operate and it responds. So it's always feedback about what I just did.
Now, in the dialog box, if it stayed the dialog box where I set the font, the spacing, the whatnot, and it shows it to me, but then I still have to click OK, it would be feed forward because I still haven't really committed the changes, right? And so this is the difference between what I call an inspector here, where the effect of the different ways of setting the properties is immediate. In a dialog box, the effect is delayed until you apply the thing, so you can still cancel it. But still, you're right that it should show me what would happen if I click OK, and that would be fit forward.
Good, I think. Yeah.
Would alignment guides be feedback as well? Because if I know I want to move this object to the center, and now I move to the center and it shows the center line.
Yes, if it shows the center line as a result of what I did, yes. If it's only doing it as potential, but I haven't done it yet, then it's feed forward. So it's this kind of subtle.
Yeah.
And we will see an example of something called sticky lines, which is doing more about what you talk about, which is really a feedback about it. It does both feed forward and feedback in the same system. But anyway, okay, let's go.
Okay, and so to summarize these discovery principles, feed forward tells users what is possible or what is about to happen, such as previewing an alignment, whereas feedback is telling users what is happening or has just happened. So you can see the effect immediately of what you're doing as you go.
And again, it's this notion of informing users about how the system operates and how they can control it. There are all kinds of other things beyond feed forward and feedback, but in this class, and what we're trying to do is give you specific generative principles where you can look for an opportunity to do feed forward or feedback and to help people discover things. There may be other things that you could do that relate to the concept of discovery, but these are specific actionable principles and make that decision. Okay.
Now and finally, two more for the road, specialization and adjustment.
And now you've got all of them on this
sheet. Well, maybe as a bonus, we'll
have a couple of other ones.
We just came up with a new one recently, so,
yeah.
but not for today.
Not today.
So specialization and adjustment. So specialization is the idea that, well, they both go under the notion of appropriation.
Appropriation. Yes. And you know what appropriation means? It's like when you take something and you make it your own. You appropriate it and use it for a different purpose. So all the pencil stuff you were doing, that's appropriation. That was designed to draw things, and you were using it to poke things and to be in cosplay things and to cook with and to tie up your hair and to do all these different things. That's appropriation. It's taking advantage of the properties that exist in the system and using them in a different way than was necessarily intended and doing that. So there are that's the general concept. It's that people do that. There's a whole, research about how that goes. And this is a specific example of a certain type of appropriation that you can do.
So I like to say that when I use a software like Google Slides, PowerPoint, all that, I feel like, being in a hotel room rather than at home. I cannot, change the furniture, the wallpaper, and it's there, and I cannot change it. Well, if I like it, it's good, but oftentimes not. Mm-hmm. Whereas at home, I can have the exact same apartment walls than the neighbor up and below. We'll each have our own sort of appropriation of that space. Mm-hmm. And so appropriation is about, making really software feel like home. And so here the example I'm showing is from PowerPoint. Where Wendy has spent endless hours doing templates for her slides,
You recognize these slides, right? You've seen them before.
And so here, for example, I have this slide, and I go into the layout, and I pick another one, which is this one, which is a different color, and swapped the left and right panels, and swapped the color.
And that, by the way, going back to the title slides, it knows, sort of, not as much as it should, but that's a title, and that's a subtitle. And so when I have the text in one format and it knows this is a title and this is a subtitle, it swaps, and now it's read and it's got the, but it's still using the concept of a title and a subtitle.
And we're trying to show this with an image, but if you put an image, it doesn't know how to switch the size, the side of the image. So it's limited. Now, there are a number of things you can, you know, personalize or customize or set preferences for in software. So again, the same question in Google Slides, what can you customize beyond templates, since this is the example that I was just showing?
Grant.
Or what it is you would like to customize.
Yeah, let's go there because it's not as customizable as we would like.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, you can definitely.
I don't know, actually, in Google Slides, can you create text styles yourself?
Yes. Oh, in Google Slides.
In Google Slides, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. You should be able to. Maybe you can, no?
Okay.
Yeah. Whenever I go into Google Slides, I'm just spending my whole time going, why doesn't it do this? Why doesn't it do that?
I feel like I'm in a really cheap hotel.
Anything else that you would like to customize? June?
What happens if, I would like to customize what happens when you put new objects into slides.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like
that's
putting
right.
An image, I want it to be a specific shape.
Right.
If I put some text, I want it to be a specific order already.
So there is a thing, sometimes it will have a format where you have people's faces and they're all in a circle. And so you'd like to be able to drag your square image or whatever and just, it'll just circle-fy it for you, and then you can move exactly where the face is and how big the face is within the circle, because the underlying image isn't always the right size, and you can just make them all. It would be nice. I've had to spend hours doing that without having those tools.
For example, when you're pasting text into a text box,
yeah.
You can have it either be no format at all,
yeah.
Or be the format that you brought it from. I want
right.
The format that already existed.
Yes,
right.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, yes. That's a good point. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Let's move on to the last one because
yeah.
We still have a little bit of things to do after this. And so the last one is what we called adjustment. And the adjustment is when you want to fine tune things and really make small changes. And there are various versions of this that we have identified, but the one I'm showing here is the fact, which is pretty natural, in fact, that when you create a new object, like here I'm creating a heart shape, I can actually specify its position, size, and aspect ratio as I create it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so here, the adjustment is something I can do when I create the shape. I was trying to do the same thing in Keynote. And in fact, in Keynote, when I select the heart, it puts a heart in the middle of my slide. And then I have to go and move it, and then I have to go and resize it.
Wow, there's something that this does better than Keynote, I'm surprised.
I don't know which option is used in Google Slides. Later on, we'll talk about the notion of a tweak, how you want to make an adjustment that is, I'm sure when you've done slides, you write your title, and it gets
long.
Just a bit too long, and it wraps, and it's like, oh, no. And so a number of systems make the adjustment for you by reducing the font size, which I hate because it hurts my eyes when the font is not the size I have decided, especially when you go to one slide to the next, and you know you can see the font size a bit smaller. Okay. And so another approach is, oftentimes, as we've said before, you put margin around your slide because you don't want text to go too close to the borders. But you know, sometimes you say, "Wow, okay, I'm going to push it a little bit." Yeah. And this is something we call the tweak, because it's not something that we want permanently there, in a sense. It's only there because my text was a bit too long. And if I were to re-edit the text, I wanted to go back to the original sort of size that I had selected with the proper margin. Yeah. So adjustments are these things where you want to, I don't want to say cheat a little bit, but sort of, you know, go a little bit beyond what the system would normally do, and break some of the constraints that you have established.
In the interest of time, and I think we should probably just stop there. But let me just say that you saw some feed forward and some feedback going on there as he was doing it. So it's not that there's one concept, one principle, and you're done. That's it. It's they affect each other, and you can sort of. But you're pulling out this perspective. All right.
And so to summarize, this is what we call appropriation. Mm-hmm. Spatialization is about letting the users customize the application, make it their own. And adjustment is about letting users fine-tune command parameters when you apply the command rather than after the fact, or to make changes like fine-tuning that is specific to an object and not sort of long-term.
Okay.
So again, we'll get into all of these into more detail. And summary slide again.
What we've done is we've talked to you about the concepts. These are the concepts. And we've talked about these specific pieces. You'll notice that this is organized in two columns. There's things about what we call a command focus and an effect focus. We will talk to you more about that, but don't worry about it for now. Right now, it's just the idea is to get an overview of this set of different principles that we're going to teach you over the next couple weeks now, in much more detail, and have you really work with them on your own projects. And you'll find that if you have this set of principles, you can fundamentally improve the existing systems that are out there. It's just a really powerful set of ideas. All right, so we've done these different activities. We've told you now about the homework is we're going to have two different activities that we have. Let's go through those. All right, so this is the first one. And I'm having trouble uploading things onto the website, so I'm going to have to figure that out over lunch.
We'll fix that.
We'll fix it. You click on this button, and it says display this assignment, and it's not doing it, so I don't know why. Anyway. But you see this drawing here. There's a big kind of F. This is actually a dark green background, and there's a series of rectangles and
squares actually.
And some text and a little
some
logo.
Triangles as well.
Right. And so your job is to find any piece of software that you like. It could be Google Slides. Recommend you use Google Slides just because it's awful for this sort of thing. But you can use anything that you like, but there's some rules about...
We've had people using text editors.
Right. But we do not want you to use the obvious tools. All right? So let's go to the next slide. You are allowed to create, delete, copy, paste, move, resize, apply color, shapes, and text. You can do all of that. But you cannot use things like align or distribute or rotate. You can only create circles, squares, and triangles. And you don't have any other specialized shapes that you can use. So the challenge
is... Note that here there is this kind of a flying bird here.
Right. You have to look at it, and it's a little bit like what you were talking about taking your brain and kind of pulling it out of the usual way and thinking a little differently. This is like the digital version of the pencil exercise. This is a kind of like, how do I think about what's going on here graphically.
And how can you use this limited set of commands to achieve that effect?
Right. And in a sense, what you're
doing
is
you want to make it efficiently.
Save yourself some time. And we want you to think about, like, keep track. Do it as an introspection. So I think you all know about an introspection is. You, like, keep track of what you're doing. You should spend 15 or 20 minutes on this. It's not, like, don't spend 3 hours. But go through and try to see what you do and think about what your strategy is. And we will talk about that next time. So that's the first homework exercise. And again, we will put the image up. You have it here, but you don't, you know,
It will be on the website.
But we will give you a thing. And then, okay, we want you to get annoyed. You guys are not annoyed enough with the software that you use. Software drives me crazy. Poor Michelle, we share an office at home, and sometimes it's like, ah! And you just have to calm down, Winnie. It's okay. It's okay. We want you to be a little bit annoyed at, or even angry at, Google Slides and tell us what's wrong. You need to think about, like, create a 20-slide deck. You can take 20 slides that already exist. It doesn't really matter. The content is not the point. But I want you to have at least three different slide formats. So you might have a title slide, a closing slide, and a something slide. Doesn't matter. Content doesn't matter. And you want at least 10 variations of one slide. So the typical thing would be, here's my title slide, and here's my 10 things that, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, and then. And you should use some text, images, and graphics. So the idea here is not, like, use a talk that you've already done. Use something that you've done, and make multiple copies of things. Don't worry about the content here. What we want you to think about is the process that you go through in interacting with this piece of software, and figure out where you try to do something and it doesn't let you do it in the way that you want. We want you to identify what are the pain points, if we use the industry term, which I don't love, but anyway. You want to figure out step by step what you're doing and what makes it hard and what would make it better. Okay? So the goal here is, we would like you to, at the end of this, so just, again, spend 20 minutes or so going through and try to do this and watch yourself using this piece of software and figure out, like, let yourself be annoyed and identify something that is really annoying to you, at least one thing that's really annoying, okay? This will help you when you're doing the design process when we get to video stuff. Believe it or not, it will. Okay? So there's a summary. This is a lot for next week. I recognize that. But what we're trying to do is get you up to speed as quickly as possible, give you sort of the whole overview. The next 2 weeks are going to be more in-depth and really working with these concepts in a kind of practical, we'll be doing, you'll be working in groups and we'll be playing with that. And it will help you if you've done this reading in advance. This will make sense. And then these two things, basically you should spend 20 minutes or so with each of these and see how far you get. All right, are there any questions on that? Okay, I guess the last thing that I wanted to do, we have about 5 minutes left, is to ask you to get into groups. And these would be the groups that you will work together with, you know, throughout. The groups can be a group of 2, 3, or 4. So you can decide. If you're a group of 4, that means you're going to have to be able to cover a larger set of things, but it means you have more people to help doing things. If you have only 2, it means that your video prototyping is going to be a little tougher, but you'll have fewer things to disagree about. But you'll have fewer sources of ideas. So, trade-offs. So we let you decide who you want to work with and what size groups. So you need at least 2 and no more than 4. We have, I think, 21 or 22.
Do they need to decide here or by time we come back next week? Or?
To the extent that you can decide now, I'd like to mark it down. So if you already know, if you just discuss among yourselves and think what you want, but we don't have to have a final decision until next week. But we do need to start, because we will start working in groups next week. Okay? So chat with each other. I have a hypothesis, which is that the groups that will emerge are remarkably similar to where you're actually already sitting. What a surprise, I know. And that doesn't bother me at all. And the reason we are giving you the option of 2, 3, and 4 is because we don't have an even number, and we're a small enough group that we can actually handle pairs, which otherwise we get. We need to have presentations at the end, so we can't have too many things, but I think we can handle it. So if you already know who you want to work with as a group, come up and let me know. And otherwise,
and is there any questions about
any last
anything
questions
we talked about, or feed forward or feedback?
Any feedback about our
feed forward?
Feed forward.
No?
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah?
For the concepts that you told us, like verification or coding first,
yeah.
When we are trying to design a new software,
yeah.
all these features,
yeah.
because none of like the people are used to this kind of interactions. How are we going to
it's
introduce this kind of
features? Classic question.
It's hard to tell them, teach them.
One of the things is that you'll find that a lot of these things are actually easier to learn. Remember the power simplicity curve that we talk about? Like, for example, the format brush is that idea. And the reason it's in there, it should be done more generally, but the reason it's in there is because it's extremely useful. People try it and they love it and they want it, right? So part of the thing is, can we create software that we have this notion of one trial learning where people go, oh yeah, that's super useful, I want it. That's what we're trying to build. And
I know that in industry in particular, they are very reluctant to innovations because, oh, our users would not understand how to do a pinch or to do this or to that. Well, sorry, but we're all humans. We have brains and we have skills. And we have several examples that we'll show in the mm-hmm. course of the lectures here where we introduce things where people say, oh, but for example, we were working at some point on bimanual interaction. You know, use interaction where you have your right hand or dominant hand on a mouse and the other one on a trackball and use your two hands simultaneously. And people were like, oh, are you crazy? It's like, have you ever had an arm usable for months? How cool is that? We're used to using our two hands. And we showed this interface that was 40% faster than anything else that existed. And people, after 1 minute, they know how to use it. Right. So. Yeah, so you can make things more clunky, obviously, and some will work much better. So I don't think that should be a criteria that you'd have upfront to say, oh, you know, this is not going to work, they're not going to understand it. Well, if you have doubts, try it with real users. But more often than not, as Wendy says, when we use these principles, things tend to be easier to understand.
Both easier and more powerful.
And more powerful.
Which is delightful. And the thing is, yes, there is resistance in industry, but we've also had people go out and do startups based on stuff in this course, successful ones, and also have people go and go in as interns and convince the people that they're working with that, oh yeah, this is a good idea. Because I always learned when I was doing my own work in industry is that having customers demand the stuff that we were doing. It was by far the best way of getting things incorporated because me saying it, like, yeah, right, whatever. But
and as interns, you have power.
Yeah, you do have
power. You have power because you cost them nothing.
yeah.
And you can say, well, you know, this is what I've been taught,
yeah.
And let me show you. If you don't like it, you know, okay, well, you don't like it, but at least give me a chance.
Yeah.
And we've had numerous cases where during the defense of the master thesis at the end, the person is coming from the company and says, oh, I was amazed, you know, I never
so
thought
much.
That
we learned so much
that,
from
that
your
works
so
well. All
yes.
the sort of quick prototyping, the all these things. Yeah, and as I said, I think in the fundamentals class, is, you know, you are our army of people who can sort of spread this in the real world. And again, as interns, you should try to use that power to say, well, let me try and you tell me if you don't like it. I know it's not always easy, and some companies are really like, you're going to use the method. But an internship is you know, goes two ways. It's you being sort of trained to be in the work environment, but also you bringing what you've learned in school. So
that's the guy. Anyway, so does anybody have groups that they want to tell me about? Basically, come up here if you have a group that you know about, and if you have like a pair that you're sure of, but you might need to talk to another pair of people to figure out whether you're going to do a group of four, then do that. But if there's anybody that's already sure of who you want to work with, let me know, and I will mark it down on our little sheet.